All right, everybody, and welcome to a very special podcast. It's the 9 years podcast versus the same old Wombles.
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
I am Nick Draper. I am joined, as always, by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins. But we are also talking this week with our big rivals in the AFC Wimbledon podcast world. We actually really don't like each other, so we're not sure how this is going to go. Okay, we're going to be at each other's throats for the duration of this as we battle for podcast supremacy. But thank you very much for joining us this week, Adam Proctor.
Thanks for having me. there are others here. Sorry.
and Niall and Matt Cooper. Brothers who support the same football team. I'm not sure that will ever catch on.
Hey, Nick. I mean, yeah, this rivalry, I'm excited by it.
Mm. Yeah, it's like Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels back in the old days, for my money. But
this is more Blur versus Oasis. That's where we're at. Obviously, yeah. we're that little bit older.
That's our age.
Well, Oasis, Blur, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, these are all the mid-90s sort of rage, you know. Better days, I think.
When tools throw Rolling Stones. Maybe that's more it.
Stop it, Niall. Stop it.
I don't even know who that is.
No, totally. Anyway,
thank you very much, gents, for joining us. We've invited you on this week to discuss ownership issues ahead of a Don's Trust meeting on Monday, I believe. And we'll talk more about that in a bit, but we've also got some football to talk about, as we always do. We have my father was a John Joe toolmaker. We'll look ahead to the trip to Port Vale. Before we do anything else, in this week, Matt, what happened in this week?
In this week, on the 26th of October 2002, commercial director Ivor Heller was excited but realistic after hearing the news that Safeway were putting the site of the old stadium up for sale. It would be a dream move back to Plough Lane, and we'll do everything to achieve it. But 12 million is a lot of money. If only if it's 12 million.
Wow, what a week.
Can't even think how much it did actually get to at the end. Do you know what? I actually don't know how much it ended up being, but hey, we got there. That's the main thing.
We did get there. Unfortunately, it all worked out financially, didn't it? We haven't had any repercussions because of it.
No, nothing
controversial has happened. There's been no kind of debate or arguments amongst the fan base at all, or anything bad. It's all been really smooth sailing, hasn't it, Matt?
Exactly.
It's all been very straightforward.
I think it was something like 33 million, I think.
Adam, you're coming in with your facts again.
Yeah, he's been Googling.
I haven't. I just remember it being like a lot more than we expected because it got stopped so many times and it went over 30 million, I believe.
Yeah, gents, you have to welcome you to the 9 years podcast. Facts and statistics are not really our thing, okay? We just we have really no idea what's going on.
If we don't know, we just make it up. And we sound convincing.
It's the best way. The best way.
I was convinced by that, definitely.
Well, gents, I'm not sure. Of course, we are 106.58% unofficial. I'm not sure how unofficial you guys class yourselves, but this must make... I can't even do the maths on how unofficial this podcast must be now, but any ballpark figures?
I'm going with 223% unofficial.
It's roughly 223, I think, unofficial. Yeah, totally. Oh, no, sorry. Is it unofficial or are we official? We know people who've been on the DTB or are standing for the DTB. I think we're pretty official, apparently.
That's it, because we have absolutely no influence at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, if you actually have ever met anybody from the DTB, that might lower your 106.58%.
Oh, yeah, you might be lowering your percent by inviting us on.
Have you actually ever been a DT member? That lowers it again.
Well, we were 108.76% unofficial, but then we remembered that I once had dinner with Adebayo Akinfenwa, so we had to.
You can't even come close to us when you're unofficial stuff. That's it. You're ruined.
Really can't. Sad times for us, but never mind. Right, we're going to talk very briefly about some footballing matters. And Stu, we're not going to spend a great deal of time on Notts County last week, a 1-0 defeat at Meadow Lane, but A lot's been said about our away record, but I thought we're playing well. Results not matching performances. Is that just a fair summation?
Yeah, I didn't think it was much in the game. To be fair, Notts County were up there. Not rumoured, but anticipated to be up near the top. I think I was quite pleased with Jody Jones being out. I think it goes through him. So, but they're a bit more pragmatic this year. I think the thing I forgot when I started watching it, obviously from my Epsom Dilla, wherever it is, some foreign place in Epsom. I forgot Alex Bass was playing for them. And then when I did, I was like, oh, this is going to be a really challenging afternoon. And him getting man of the match probably said it all. But it wasn't, hey, look, there wasn't much in it. It was just a rubbish set piece, which is not like us. So I think the defeat looked even worse because of the goal that we conceded.
We were the better team. You know, having been there at the ground, we created the better chances. Tilly and Nerfield were having a field day down both the flanks. We were just creating good chances. I mean, it just didn't fall for us. I'm not going to say much more because I did speak to you earlier on, and I know you want to have your Josh Kelly moment, so I'll let you have your Josh Kelly moment because we've done that already on the Same Old Wombles podcast where I may or may not have said that. I have this big thing about confidence players. Mr. Kelly, I think, falls squarely into the confidence player category, but anyway.
Well, absolutely. We are going to mention Josh Kelly because he did come on and he did miss a golden opportunity, but he was not the only one on Saturday to miss some chances. But we said this last week, didn't we, Stu, about the idea of reserve team football and how a run of actual games and competitive action would probably do him the world of good right now. Frustration for me, Stu, on Tuesday night, we beat Morecambe 3-0, and we will discuss that and obviously the goals in that game shortly. But we were 3-0 up with, 20 minutes to go? And it seemed the ideal opportunity for Josh Kelly to get some minutes, and it didn't come. I think he came on in like the 82nd, 83rd minute. Is that just Johnny Jackson's sort of conservative nature? Is that the reason behind it?
I think we know Johnny. Sub-wise, if I felt there, not a weakness, but if I felt it's something that we could probably improve on with Johnny, would be our substitutes and when we use them and stuff like that. Got five subs, haven't we? So we don't always use them. If you look at minutes of players and stuff like that, it's very much Joe Piggott and Josh Kelly are playing second fiddle to Omar and Matty Stevens. There's nothing wrong in that because that's working. We're scoring goals, aren't we? But yeah, I'm still convinced of the reserve football thing. We talked about it last week, didn't we? That you need games. And I know we sometimes do games behind closed doors and stuff. Not many that I've heard that we're doing, because at the moment you've got so many fixtures coming up that you don't really want to pick up injuries. But I agree with Niall. He's a confidence player. You know, I also think someone like Callum Maycock, very similar character. They're, you know, interviewing both together at the same time, you've got no chance, none of them talk. But they are confidence people. And I sort of feel Maycock getting game time, improving his game. Hey, he needs game time, but what do you do? Do you put him in instead of Matty Stevens? No. So we've got a bit of a conundrum, haven't we?
It feels to me like what's going to happen, I guess, is if things don't improve. You're right. I mean, like we used to have the wonderful leagues. I remember looking at it back in the 80s. There was an actual reserve league, and you would care about those results as well. You'd be looking at, I can't remember what it was called, the Southeast Combined Counties or something.
Yeah, the Combined Counties League.
Yeah.
So, the Avon Combination.
Yeah, Combination. That was it.
The reason I know it is because I used to go down to Plough Lane at 2 o'clock to watch. Do you know what, Matt? It's interesting. I actually saw David James play reserve football at Plough Lane.
But yeah, you
regularly got Tottenham chucking out decent teams.
Yeah.
Whereas now we see the under-21s, don't we? Let's not go through that. But we see the under-21s all the kids in now, don't we?
Well, I guess the trouble's going to be that if things don't change, my feeling is that Kelly probably gets loaned out and we get someone else in as that fourth. That would be my sense. That was what might happen.
I always feel frustrated about Kelly because he creates chances. He's in the right place.
Yeah.
It's like he's one of these, he just needs one off the shin or something like that. Mm. And it'll just be like, I mean, like, I would say roughly he had about 7,800 years of time to choose his spot at Notts County, roughly. And it must have been the fact that the two nearest players were roughly somewhere. One was in Norwich, and I think the other one was in Wrexham. And it must have been the proximity to them that must have really done him in.
Paul.
I mean, like, you know,
I feel for him. I really do feel for him.
I mean, it's just awful.
The good news is that when he did come on a Tuesday night, we were already 3-0 up and the game was already won. All right. So, and we did have goals from our two strikers, Stevens and Bugle, both scored. It was Omar's first goal since the opening day in the league. So that was a relief for him, I'm sure. But we're all going to talk about James Tilley's opening goal. And Stu, I think you will agree with me when I say he really should have put it more in the corner.
I was more amazed that their manager was giving their goalkeeper grief for not getting anywhere near it. I was like,
he did say that.
I was like, really? Like, to be fair, I missed it.
Say this to me, Stu. You're making me sad when you say this.
I missed it. So I started packing up our stuff ready to do the post-match stuff. And as I was doing it, I just heard, what? And like a massive cheer. And I'm like, what was it? And someone said, Tilly scored. And they said it was his right foot, which made me even more like, what the? So I had to run up to the West End concourse because it's about a 40-second delay. So I had to run up to the concourse to see the goal. And then I was just like, he ain't got a right foot. So, yeah, some goal.
How far out are we putting this at? What, 30 yards? It felt like it felt further at the time.
It did feel further at the time.
It was miles away.
It was about 30 yards.
Maybe. No, it's just a surprise. I didn't miss it, but it surprised me. I was like, I wasn't expecting it. So I was like, oh, it's gone in. What the heck?
It was a bit.
And I was kind of looking at my friend who came and thinking, What's just happened? We don't score goals like that.
It was one of those goals. It was very picturesque, wasn't it? The ball, the flight of the ball, it didn't deviate. It's sort of, I'm really sad sometimes when the ball hits the net and it doesn't, it sort of like stays at the same level. I'm just a bit sad sometimes for that sort of thing. It just felt perfect.
I was going to say, you almost sounded then that you were describing the goal as going, I was a bit disappointed. It was just straight arrow. How boring is that? Nothing particularly special. He's hit it from, like, you know, I mean, we can all do a sweepstake on how far it was. But, you know, I mean, I think he scuffed it myself.
It was, I mean, I think it was one, it's probably got to be one of the best goals I've seen down at Plough. It was amazing. And there's a great, Don's vlog put out a video afterwards and that showed the goal. It's a wonderful angle. If you get a chance to see that, that's just, it's beautiful. It was a sensational thing. And I think it was all about Morecambe holding back, wasn't it? And doing what a lot of sides do against us, you know, holding out and then hoping to catch us on the break. And then they had to come forward after we scored that goal. Amazing goal.
That done them. I always look at reactions of players. So if you look at Omar Begill's reaction when James Tilley shoots and scores, it's not like, oh my God, like, it's just sometimes you see reactions of players of realising how good the goals are. So if you haven't seen it, have a look at Omar Begill because he just looks up at the heavens as if like, wow, I just, on that side of it. But you're right, you know, Morecambe did have to come out. They collapsed, didn't they? Like, I think we've all seen relegation teams come down to Plough Lane. And I think the last two teams we've just seen, Carlisle and Morecambe, have shown both signs of struggling.
Yeah, but do you know what? In fairness to Morecambe, I think that was a better win against them than it was Carlisle because they were better organised as a rule throughout the game, I think, than Carlisle were. They battled harder. They won, especially in that first half. It turned into a bit of a scrap and they were winning their duels and they were stopping us from getting in behind. And as you say, the first goal opens it up completely. I thought the second goal was really well worked from us, to be honest, but it did help that they were pushed slightly further forward as they actually tried to get back into the game. And because they were slightly pushed further forward, it seemed to be an ideal opportunity for Josh Kelly to use his pace to get in behind. But hey, what do I know?
But there was another moment, wasn't there, where is it Hippolyte who was sent through? And he's one-on-one. And as soon as that happened, I thought, he's going to miss this.
Again, don't call me sad, right? But have a look at Omar Begill's reaction as well, because Omar plays the ball through and he doesn't even... So Omar plays the ball, he doesn't even bother running through to get on it or anything like that. He just stops and then he misses. So, I mean, I think in my old age, I'm just looking at other people's reactions rather than the actual person on the ball now. I have this thing with that. But I thought he scored that. I think he's a good finisher, isn't he, Pippa? But yeah, no, they did fall apart. I was sitting with Dave Salmon, who's the Morecambe guy, and he just said to me, "Yeah, we're buggered." I didn't really want to agree with him because I knew obviously he had a long journey home. So I was like, just tried to be nice.
Yeah, it was quite a long distance to travel for a Tuesday night game for the apparently 121 travelling fans. Going to be honest, not quite sure. Well, it didn't look quite as many as 121, but hey, that's the official figure. But talk about away attendances, and we'll talk more about the numbers we're going to be taking up to Milton Keynes next week. But we seem to be hit the 1,000 mark there already. But Stu, how many did we actually take up? To it was a good turnout at Notts County. How many did we take up?
You asked me for numbers. 808.
Sorry, say it again.
808.
Thank you very much. Right.
Oh, on to the... Did you just make that up and said it with real confidence? Is that sounded like that?
Yeah, see, I told you. I can talk rubbish and just sound confident.
Like, having said that you don't do statistics, it's like, 808. I could play this game. No, it was 812. And you've got that family in the corner.
It feels to me like it's a segue to an 808 state tune.
This is what it is. I know a segue when I hear one.
I would say that's a spoiler, but actually everyone would have heard the joke by the time you said that, Adam. It's a spoiler for all of us on the podcast. I forget we're not doing this live. Hey, anyway, shout out to Chris Moyles. Right, let's get on to the main event then of this week's podcast. And Stu, I'm not sure. I'm in two minds how to do this. All right. Either I let you take the lead on this one as the architect in a Seth Rollins kind of fashion of this podcast. But then I'm also looking at this email that I've received, yesterday actually, reminding me of this general meeting on Monday at 7 p.m., in which two sort of main things are being spoken about, which are two changes to the constitution, I believe. But you know what? As I say that, my computer, there we go, freezes. So we're going to talk about two main things, which is creating certain super restricted actions to increase protections against maybe stadiums and clubs' name and all that business, and then to change the minimum current ownership of AFCW PLC to 50.01. So, Stu, what are your thoughts on these two actions and then why we're all here this evening to discuss them?
Yeah. So I was listening to the same old Warms podcast this week. And I really enjoy, obviously, you guys have covered it really well. And obviously, I know, Niall, you've got a background in it. So it's always good to get a bit of an idea of where it is. And I just found it really interesting. So I think one of my frustrations is like, this is probably one of our biggest votes for a long while. And it feels like it's just been a little bit of a side issue. It's actually quite a big one, really, on that side of it. So it was really a case of discussing the vote. Are we confident that we're going to pass it? If we don't pass it, what's the answer? I know, Adam, obviously you said you're standing for the Don's Trust Board, which is great, because we need people to stand. We can't have an uncontested election, because I don't really want people just standing because they don't. I want people standing because they want to be on it and can add something. And also, you were talking about your restricted actions, your super restricted actions, which really made me think, actually, there's some more bigger issues with it. So I just felt, as we are all adults, it was a good opportunity to discuss it. But I think from my point of view...
Speak for yourself, Stu.
Well, you know, I lay my cards on the table. I'm probably going to vote for yes, but my yes vote is probably up for grabs. Because I'm not totally convinced what the positive is. I need to have some sort of clarification that what we're doing is right or there's a reason for it. And if we don't do it, I need to be convinced that me voting no doesn't maybe push the can down the road to come up another time. And obviously, Niall, with your fair game, which has been, you know, obviously with the independent regulator, that's caused a bit of a stir this week, which is always fun, isn't it, and that sort of side of it. I just thought it was a good opportunity. It really, you know, Adam put it really across, a really good way of it. Very strong views, which actually, John, I'd rather have a strong view than a, you know, I'm not too sure on that side of it. So that's really what it was, just to discuss why we think we should or shouldn't. And also, do we think the restricted action will actually pass and will there be enough numbers coming in? Because my worry is we've increased the Don's Trust membership by about 4,000. And I give you a rough example. My son's school has got quite a few Wimbledon fans, season ticket holders. And I was chatting to one of them, the mums today, and she went, "I've got one of those emails, Stu, and I just don't want all the politics. I don't really care." And I said, "But you've got to vote." I sound like some sort of politician, but you have your vote. But she might be reflective of quite a few. We do need the turnout. So yeah, that was a little bit of where I was with it.
Shall I start and kind of give you a kind of
And Nick, at any moment, you just jump in here because honestly, this could go on for a bit.
Well, I think we, you know, hey, look, we know, we've all had meetings and stuff like that, so we no one's going to talk over each other, John. Man, I think we've all got enough opportunity to talk.
You say that.
No, but then, what Matt is saying is you can't stop Niall.
Oh, I know.
Okay, well, right.
We have got a mute button somewhere, but we Nick.
I'm just going to set a timer on my phone. So what do we want? Like,
yeah, that's the
3 minutes, 4 minutes. How long are we talking?
Yeah. Three matches.
Noel's not too sure now. He don't want to commit.
Right. Okay. I'll start with where I am with the actions. For me, I don't see the benefit of going below 75%. I think that there are a lot of people that back AFC Wimbledon because of our USP, and our USP is being fan owned. I think we really are naive if we don't think about what that perception is and how much that really adds to our value. And I also don't think that we have done enough to market or sell ourselves as a fan-owned club. And I think that has improved a bit. I think Mark Jones coming in is doing some of the comms has helped a bit in that line. That's where I think the problem is. I think we've had a PLC and we've had some senior members within the AFC Wimbledon setup that don't buy into us being a fan-owned club or don't have it in their culture. And that means that at the very core, it's really difficult to market yourself if you've got people that don't back it or don't buy into that vision. That's, for me, is a big issue. And I think we need to just draw a line and say, look, we are a fan-owned club and 75% seals that. That's where morally I said there's a whole issue about the 25%, below 25%, at 25%, then you can get people just constantly vetoing certain things. And it's like, well, you just veto and veto and veto until you get what you want. And that worries me as well. And equally, who do we sell these people to? Who's the next person they sell on to? We don't have that much control, and that worries me. There's a whole load of caveats going on, a whole load of other ideas. I'm not convinced by any of them. So that's where I stand on that 75%. Very quickly on fair game, and this is what's going to then flick it a bit the other way, is that the independent regulator will put in protections on the ground, which is a new one, which has just happened. So any ground sale has to have a majority of fan support. This is what fair game been lobbying for a long time, and it's great that that's a big success. I'm really chuffed about that one. But also the club name, the club badge, the club colours, all of that has to be approved by the fans under the new regulator. So that's a security blanket that's going to come in that we have, but every other club will now have as well. So those are good things. So there are things that fans worry about that actually are going to become the norm. So a lot of that, there's security here. Morally, I'm just worried about the direction of travel of the club if we go below 75% and where we can go and what we can invest in that ethos and what makes us different. So that's the two sides of it. So there are kind of other nuances. I'll shut up now, Nick. I don't know how I'm doing for my time. I don't know if you've got your stopwatch where I'm at.
I think you've come in well under. I think you've done well there. So
I'm amazed. What I've got is I've got my brother going like on his other computer going like, geez, boy. And Adam kind of going, he's on the one again. So thank you, Nick. Thank you, Stu, for coping with me. Like, that's it. Over to the other people now. I'll take questions on any of that.
So I was going to say, like, me and Niall generally agree in lots of ways. However, I've come to the position where I would be happy to go to 50.01, understanding that that still establishes us as a fans-owned club, as long as those other restrictions are in place in terms of the shareholders only being allowed to own 15% and those kind of things. What is stopping me from definitely pressing that button is that the super restricted actions that are introducing don't cover that first point. They only cover the sale of the stadium and the name of the club. They don't move the idea that we can't go below 50.01 into a super restricted action. And now I still don't think that's strong enough. I would like that to be it's something we can't vote on, actually. So I'm nervous to pull that lever, as they call it, which I don't think will give us anything anyway, but, you know, it's an option. When I don't know how we move, at the very least, that 50.01 to a super restricted action, because that makes me nervous. So I'm kind of torn. I've been won over by the, okay, we can go below 75%. It allows people maybe to buy that equity if anyone's going to buy it. I don't think is a get out thing for the 2019, 20, whatever the next one is, you know, share thing. So I think we have, as Niall says, I think we have to go through a whole load of other stuff to kind of sell our USP, to raise finances in lots of other ways. And I think some people, I don't know, but are thinking that they might be able to use this kind of equity as the get out clause. But I don't believe that. So I'm sort of torn at this point. I'm like, okay, I like the idea of the super restricted actions, but if you're not going to move that piece into that category, then I'm not ready to do that. I think it should be it shouldn't be a votable thing. I'd like to get this off the table and be like, we're fan owned, it's 50.01, and that can't ever change. And I don't see any reason why we wouldn't hang on to that USP and then go gung-ho on financing based on that positioning. And that's what makes me kind of think, where am I going to go?
It's kind of in typical 9 years fashion. Regular listeners will be laughing at this one. We're going to dot around many different things here because there's so many things that have been raised just in what you guys have said there. I guess my first question is, with the 50.01, if it was, let's just take that one as a starter, if that's what is voted for, that we're going to make that the minimum amount we need to have, and we can look into then selling 25% somewhere else. If that is what happens, in the immediate term, I don't see that as a problem. I don't have any issues with that, or I have no concerns about that, except for, I think, actually, it will be, I don't want it to be viewed by many people as that, and I think it's sort of what you alluded to there, Adam, maybe, as that sort of a panacea for our problems. Because you say, we have no idea if we're going to be able to sell that percentage to who, for how much, and how much we're going to get out of it. So even if we were to say yes to this, we still need to be thinking, we've still got quite a lot of bond repayments to make. How are we going to manage to do this? And how are we going to manage to generate that revenue in the meantime? I guess tying in with that, Niall, as you say, we don't seem to sell or market the fan ownership side of us, as you say, well enough. But even if we were to, how much more money or revenue could we generate? I'm just thinking at the moment, we're close to capacity every home game in Division 4, essentially. And do we know what the main driver of, like, if you think when we left Kings Meadow, say we're getting like 4,000 home fans every week, and now we're getting at least, say, 6,500 consistently home fans. Do we know what's driving those people to come to watch us? Is it fan ownership? Is it locality? And do we know that data, and how helpful would that data be?
It's useful. That would be really useful data to have, Nick, to be honest. First of all, I think that would be great data to have. I'm sure part of it is the fact that it's location. That's really helped. I'm sure that's part of it. But I'm also sure that being fan-owned does play that part. That story, you know, and it's the story that John Green is the best at telling it. I mean, that's his job, really. He tells stories, and he tells the story of AFC Wimbledon beautifully. So I think I think that would be really interesting to have that sort of data.
In terms of people that I've brought to the game over the last, you know, to play online, the reason they come is because they see us as different, you know, and they are fans of other clubs, etc. But they appreciate, and some aren't even football fans, but they see the energy and the excitement about that because I talk to them about it, us being fan-owned. And so they are happy to spend the money that they spend there because maybe I'm talking to a specific circle of people who don't want to feed, you know, the capitalist model of nonsense, but they want to come. And they're neutrals in that sense, you know. And I was going to just to add to what Nick's saying, you know, we get this 120 grand raised for the pitch. That wouldn't have happened if at least our story didn't exist as being fan owned. And I don't think we can make much more money. Well, that having said that, the beer robot's not working.
Oh, no, save it for next week, mate.
Right, but I think it's more about external funds. I think the match day revenue is really happening, right? I think it's really happening, and I think we can continue to do that. And but I think we want to attract external sponsors who buy into our ethos and our manifesto. And I don't, and as Niall said, I don't think we've done that. And John Green is a really great example of buying into that early on. And there's going to be other people like that. So I think there's the funding will come initially from outside of the stadium, which will then allow us to expand the stadium. And I reckon that we'll see people locally because of what Matt says, being in the local area.
Stuart, and I think you had your hand up, but like, you know, if you want me to rabbit on, I can rabbit on. But like, you were performing, I definitely want to speak. But you're up for me to go, Stu? All right, cool. So on the going back to the 50.01 percentage stuff, right? There's some really big questions to ask about this. Who would want to invest in a fourth division football club, and why would you want to invest in a fourth division football club? What are you looking to get out of investing in us? Right. If for most owners, and having looked and studied a lot of them, right, you're either a person who just loves the fans and happy to throw money away for no reason at all, right, which is your kind of ideal owner who really doesn't get, like, you know, the fact they've got a bottomless pit. But most of them are about either trying to make some sort of investment, some sort of deal, some sort of financial thing out of the club and actually get money out of what we're trying to do. Is that, given our history and given what has happened at loads and loads of other clubs, what we really want? I'm going to put this one in the mix. 58% of clubs in the top four divisions are technically insolvent. We are not one of those, right? That's what would happen. That's the kind of route you take down with most other owners who come in and do that. We put ourselves back in that risk market. And that's what really worries me when we start looking at external investment. I just am like, I've got an allergic reaction from what our history is and from what I've seen elsewhere about that. And that really worries me about what the kind of people that would come in and invest in our club. When we think about what we could get and what Forest Green Rovers example, Forest Green Rovers is a village, right? It's a village. There is no way in a million years they should have had anywhere near the level of success they have. But they've got a USP that they market to death, right? And they massively overachieve. We are not a village. We are a big town in a massive capital city with the potential to really reach out to loads and loads and loads of people. The potential of our story pushing on and getting people wanting to be connected with our brand is massive. That's where we should be putting our focus in. If I was looking at it and going, well, where should we put our investment in? That's where we should be investing, rather than risking somebody else is coming in. Oh, well, what do I want to do? I just want to pick this bit up and pick that bit up. We should be looking at those sponsors. These guys hear it all the time. I'm rabbit about this nonstop, but that's my, you know, that's really what gets my goat. I just really worried about who wants to buy into a Fortitude Football Club. What makes us different?
I think that's what I want to know a bit more. I just feel like the information, like, you know, you touched on it, where I was thinking of, like, you know, if we go down to 50.01, what's the plan? You know, we've increased the Dons membership. There's a lot more, I think there was Join the Dons on the advertising boards. Feels like there's a bit more of a joined up message. My worry is that I keep hearing we could do this, we might do this, we should do this, and we don't. And that worries me because, realistically, the bonds we have are starting to mature, and as we kick, you know, the transfer market is probably going to die. You know, let's be fair, Addy was just a one-off. Let's be honest with you, like, you know, getting Addy and stuff like that. Yes, we will make money from our academy. You know, we sell a lot of players who don't even reach the first team through the academy, and that sort of brings in money. But I just need to need, you know, even though I said I would vote down to 50.1, if someone gave me a real good argument as to why we stay at 75% with a plan, then I'm all yours. You know, that's the thing that worries me. Now, in terms of the story, Adam, you echo, obviously I do the stadium tours and I'm nosy with stadium tours. I ask them, you know, why did you come to football? What, you know, let's be fair, I started doing it when we got relegated and we were still getting people coming to the tours. Normally they were smiling before they watched the football because obviously their football didn't do too much. But it was really interesting. You know, lots of people that didn't move to the area. You know, I'll give you an example. I had an Australian couple who had just moved to Wimbledon for work. They literally popped into the club shop as I was doing a tour and said, oh, I'll come on a tour. They actually finished the game with tickets for the next game. So, you know, there's no doubt the story is massive. But for me, I always talk about good owners and bad owners. I want us to make sure we're good owners because we are owners, we're all owners. I want us to make sure we're good owners by seeing what's around us and not trying to keep the fan ownership or the model we've got going just because it looks great. You know, because the last thing that I want is for us to hit 2027 when those bonds come up. We're in a little bit of a, you know, because ultimately the money will come out of the squad. And when the football on the pitch isn't great, we know from experience, people, you know, I'll give you a funny story. Many times I go and do the tour and they come to me and go, so when you build in the other stand then, you know, because they see a lovely shiny plough lane. And I say, well, the main stand costs £22 million to build. And they're like, wow. So when are you going to build the other ones? I went, we haven't paid for the £22 million one yet. Realistically. So I think we have a lot of fans who come because it's local. It's a great area, let's be fair. The fan zone, the family area, they all love, you know, their kids come. But I just wonder sometimes whether we get to them enough with that message. So no, you know, what you're saying is all ears to me, because actually I want to have, if I say no to 50.1, I want to see a plan, but I don't want it to stop. Like, it just feels like we need to do this. And if the membership, and I've got no doubt, you know, I think we got an extra 600 and something members this season, during the season, with a 50 quid a pop. That's not to be sniffed at. So I just feel, and you did say something that I agree with you, the club is not aligned with that message. And I don't necessarily say that's their fault, but it needs a really strong lead. I don't think that's even an answer. That's just me being ranting, being truthful.
I think, to be honest, one of the things I think is sometimes it feels almost like an easy solution if we go down to 50. But then at some point, we're going to hit a wall again and go, well, what can we do next? We have to bring in more money. And then there's a decision to make there, which might be tricky. Well, would be very tricky about going under 50. We have a resource problem. And the fact is, it would be great to sell our story. And so, like, to do that, you need someone in place who can go out, build those relationships, tell the story, develop those relationships over a period of time, and then you bring them in as investors or supporters even. Because I think another issue is, what do people get if you buy 15%? You know, what do you actually get? Because I know a lot of people are being knocked back because they're asking, when does their investment come to fruition? You know, what happens after 10, 15 years when they want to sell it? You know, how, you know, they might not get their money back. So,
but they get a board plate.
They'll get a board plate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're doing is, but that's all they'll get. They'll get a board plate. Yeah, but you could say if you invest a certain amount of it, you don't need to have shares necessarily. If you invest a certain amount, you get shares. But I guess if you're investing 15% or whatever, you can sell it on, and then you sell that ball place on, which is.
So Matt, I was going to say that. I was going to say, because the thing of all of it comes down to the fact, which Niall will agree with, is that the finances in football are broken, right? And so and Stu's quite right. We know we could go to the stay fan owned for a bit. We can sell the story, etc. But if we don't shine as a beacon, as a different position that football can take, so you can be fan owned, you can be more than a business, you can be something that sits in the community. That's how football clubs should be run. Then we will continue to have this, you know, this conversation over and over again, because we'll just go back to ploughing money in. So I think that's why I also think we should just go super strong on this and say, we're never going to go below being fan-owned, because this is the best way to run football. And then, however we do that, whether it's through the Don's Trust board or wherever, is convince other clubs that they need to move in some way towards that model. And that might come through the football governance things, it might come through fair game, it might come just through lobbying and whatever. So I think that's kind of the elephant in the room, you know?
I think my question would be, with all this, is what is the sort of end game for us? Like, what is the aim? We're thinking short. This 50.01, I'm guessing, is coming largely because of worries about financing and bond repayments and stuff like that. But longer term, we're not stuck at a bit of a catch 22, really, because yes, we want to progress as a football club, and you say, well, we want to prove that we can do that with a sustainable self-financing model. And then we want to rise up the leagues. And at that point, what do we start doing? Well, we start thinking about, as Stu says, expanding the stadium and spending money to expand the stadium to generate more money. at that point, if we start building the stadium, do we lose things like the fan zone, for example? Do we start losing those little things that make us different? Do we just become then another football club? At which point do we have an identity other than one that is just like every other football club, which just wants to be as successful as possible on the field? It's like, what is our actual aim here? Because I can't answer that. I mean, to be honest with you, the only thing I can promise you that I think as a football club we have done and done successfully in the last couple of years has been all to do with the football side and bringing in Craig Cope and improving that side of things to, again, progress up the divisions. Does that not come with the cost of losing what makes us different?
I don't think so. I think this is where I go a bit more wide on the political front and I talk a bit about what direction of travel is on Fair Game stuff, because this is actually what's happening now. This is what the Football Governance Bill, which landed this week, ruined my day because I had to like do loads of stuff with Fair Game and loads of stuff. Anyway, that is an opportunity to look at how much clubs spend to make sure that the routine of how much you get in revenue cannot overspend on players' wages or what that revenue is. You cannot, that should be 70% is what the kind of UEFA level is, that you have to have a certain amount of money that is ring-fenced towards academies and towards stadium development. All of these are things that are potentially going to come in. If those things come in, what that does is it levels the playing field for us. So if you're looking at financial distribution model and it looks at trying to encourage sustainability, encourage well-run clubs, we tick all those boxes at the moment. But a lot of the clubs around us don't. So what that would actually mean is that we would go up in terms of our actual spending power, because relative spending power, because other clubs will have to abide by strict rules, which will come in. Those sort of things are on the cards. And actually, some of what Fair Game is proposing is even stronger than that. So forget the fact what we want to amend. The new regulation system will benefit AFC Wimbledon. A stronger regulation system that looks at rewarding well-run clubs, that looks at a fairer distribution, will also massively benefit AFC Wimbledon, which is what Fair Game are campaigning for. Those, if we're looking at the horizon, the future bits, Nick, gives us that opportunity to say, well, actually, there's going to be a new set of funding set aside for ground redevelopment if your club has a certain level of capacity. That gives us the ability to access money that we don't have at the moment, that looks at that other, the East Stand, and goes, well, actually, we've got an opportunity to grow because we are financially sustainable. We can access that funds. Those are the things that have been discussed and we expect them to be tabled as amendments. They will be. That is the future that we could get. And this is the bit where I get frustrated about the Don's Trust and the AFC Wimbledon executive for not realising that is a much easier way of accessing funds than this whole 50%, 50.01% that we've been battling on about. That's where we should be putting our resources in, because that is actually up for grabs.
See, this is where. So I was at Plough Lane during the summer when we had the Fair Game conference. And do you know what? I come away that really like positive, because the people that spoke in the room, I was really impressed with what they said. I could see definitely that journey. What concerns me is timing. Of course, these things don't come in overnight because they're massive projects, aren't they? So I really like the independent regulator. One, because it's scary in the Premier League, because you can tell by their statements that are coming out. Like, if you can ever smell fear, that's where it is. But so I was vote to stay 75% for Fair Game, and I've got no reason to think that the independent regulator won't come in. But I don't want us to just go, well, you know what, we'll wait for them to come in because that will solve the problem. So I agree with you. We, you know, it has to work where the club would do a bit of the work. So we're not going, well, you know what, the independent regulator is coming, that's going to solve all our problems. That's not going on its own. So I do agree with you. So you have won me over a little bit. And I thought you might well do, because I like the independent regulator. But I just don't want us to stand still. I worry. See, where you're, Adam, I agree with you. You know, the worries you have, I agree. My biggest worry is that we fail as a fan-owned club and we sink. And that's my worry. So it's not that I've said before that I've set up, hey, look, do you know what? That's a very, had to be the right owner and stuff like that. But as a fan, I'm ambitious. Doesn't mean I want to be a Wrexham, who, let's be fair, anyone's seen the Charlton Wrexham half scarves? Hilarious. I don't want to be a Wrexham, but I want to be competitive. Because there's nothing worse, Nick, right? When you get someone coming down, like Rotherham used to come down, right? And they've spent, you go and think, how the hell have you got that in your squad? Like, I've seen Rotherham. Like, there's no way you should be having that money. And it frustrates the hell out of me. You know, so I want a competitive balance on the pitch. So I think I'm with you on that. What I would say quickly, Adam, on the restrictive action, I'm against the super restrictive action. And the reason I say that, I think the restrictive action we've got at the moment is tough to hit, as it is. You know, if you think back in two ticks, that had a lot of promotion to get everyone to come in. And we've got, what, four or five times the amount of members on that. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. I just don't ever want us to put ourselves in a situation where we really have got to achieve something near impossible when push comes to shove. That would only be my reservation.
Yeah, I think we'd all agree that we'd want, as Nard, you've been saying there, we want a football model across English football in which, as you say, there's a level playing field. It's never going to be a completely level playing field, but, you know, a sustainable level where nobody can come in, like Stu says, do a Rex and just flood a squad with loads of money and financially dope themselves forward or whatever, and then you get all the increase in inflation of player wages, salaries and all that business that comes with it. It's not really, I suppose we could go off on tangents here. If these regulations come in and say, and they make these restrictions for football clubs and whatever, is the next step a club's, and I'm not saying this would be a bad thing by any means, by any stretch of the imagination, actually, because I think we're all sick of clubs like Manchester City and the likes, but is there a chance they go, right, you're bringing these regulations, but we're foreign owned anyway, so we're going to move all our operations abroad and we're going to get together with all the, again, the European League is going to rise up again, and they just say, to hell with it, off we go, we can play by our own rules somewhere else.
Right, so the other bit,
here he goes, I'm just winding him up, let's get going and off.
I love the way, you can't see this, but I love the way Matt has a really cheeky grin of going, I know what's coming. I love it.
Right, so I'm also on the executive board of the Union of European Clubs, right? So we're looking at what the situation is in Europe and what that means. And one of the conversations that comes up a lot amongst us, the Union of European Clubs is like all the clubs who don't qualify for Europe and in the, you know, professional status, right? So there's a whole bunch of them across the continent. And the conversation is going more and more towards you have brands and you have clubs. AFC Wimbledon is a club. The top six clubs in the Super League are brands. And if we're going to paint a dystopian view of what football will become or could become, and is the path it's taking, is that those brands play their games wherever they are in the world. Frankly, they don't really care about fans or the community. So we can see the level, the relative spend on community, local community from the top clubs in the English pyramid is much, much less than it is for clubs lower down the pyramid, right? Their investment, it's not that, that's not what they're thinking about. They're thinking about not just the 39th game, but they're thinking about the 39th game might be the one game they actually play at their home ground because they're playing all over the world. That is the way that is thinking. They're thinking about a global entertainment business. That's the direction of travel that mindset is going in. And do we get to a point, and this is a conversation for which I changed my mind about whether the top six should just bugger off or not. Do you get to a point where going, let them go because they are brands. People can have a brand. You can go, oh, like, I like wearing Nike shoes. I like, you know, following Arsenal on television, but actually my club is AFC Wimbledon. Because there's a difference between a club and a brand. And what we're seeing is those top clubs more and more becoming brands. And that's where the disconnection is. And it's, you know, is that the future that could be? And I changed totally.
Joe, I will watch the Champions League. I'll watch the Premier League because actually I love football. So I could watch a park. I'll watch a game down a park and stuff like that. But I also know that it might be the Premier League and it's two divisions away from us, but it might as well be 10 for all we were. Do you know what I mean? We're never going to be anywhere near it. But it's like, I call it fantasy football, stuff that I will never, ever see at Plough Lane ever again. Well, off Ali Al-Hamadi, of course, on that side of it. Do you know a question? And Joe, the brands thing is really interesting, actually. That's really interesting. I can see why that would, because they are, let's be fair, they're a brand. You know, Barcelona, Real Madrid, all that sort of side of it. Question I've got, right, is how desperate, and I don't know this, but I'm just going to chuck it in. The Don's Trust board are chucking this in that at 50.1 and they want it to pass. I worry that there's a bit of desperate around it and there's not a clear message coming out of that. Does that make it feels to me like they want it to come through, but I still haven't heard a good enough reason. I really haven't. Whereas you give me a great reason to not, because actually, yeah, there's some stuff going on in the background. But I just wonder, are the Don's Trust board desperate and know something we don't? And is that something that needs, because the meeting on Monday is going to be interesting. One, hopefully quite a few turn up on that thing. But I still feel like we're not being told something. Maybe that's me.
Yeah, because they always seem to say that they haven't actually got a buyer in place. There's no one in place. And the other thing I get the information from is if this did happen, we wouldn't be getting people in place immediately. This is to ensure that maybe in a couple of years' time that we've got the option to sell that, 15% or 25% or whatever. But there isn't anyone in place at the moment. This is just putting a safeguard in place just in case we need to be able to use it. That's what it seems to be. But you're right. I mean, I generally, apart from getting a place on the PLC board, I don't understand why you would invest, because you're not going to be making a huge return on your investment.
Why are you investing in a fourth division club?
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Particularly considering the financial situation in English football is getting worse and worse, more and more difficult to go up the pyramid. So, there are a number of people who invest into football clubs, will put loads of money in, go up a division, and the club's worth more and they can sell and make a profit. Yeah. That's the kind of gambling model that exists in football. But the problem is those gaps are getting wider and wider. So it's actually, until you fix the system, why are you going to invest in a fourth division football club? I don't get it.
I think the only conspiracy that's happening is that 50.01 is still fan owned, and someone at some point felt that we might have the option to get some more equity sold, and so that's an option.
Yeah.
But everything we're hearing suggests that no one's going to buy any of that equity. No one's going to do any. No one's going to do that. So it does seem weird that. Do we just want to get that over and done with so then we can focus on trying to raise funds elsewhere? It does feel like a little bit of a panic.
What I'll pick up on that, Adam, is the amount of energy that we've spent on this podcast talking about it, and that the DTB are talking about it, and some of our fans are talking about it. If that energy was put on marketing us as our USP as being fan-owned to try and get sponsors in, if it was put into the energy of trying to get a whole people effectively lobbying government to make sure that this football governance bill actually really helps out to Wimbledon. That is, in terms of return on investment, a far, far better use of our time than having this round and round the table debate about 50.01 or 75%. It frustrates me because it's like, really, we're a club with all these passionate, very intelligent fans, and we're wasting that skill set on an argument when there's so much easier ways of raising that money than doing stuff that we've got no guarantee on anyway.
And that's where, I know you want to come in there, that's where it worries me, because we're close to 4 years at Plough Lane. And the Plough Lane bond one is being paid up, it feels like it's just come around the corner so quickly. And we've got another 3 years to hit the next lot. And it just feels to me like, this is why I want a plan. Because if we say yes to the 50.1 and it gets kicked into the long grass, because actually still no one wants to buy that equity, then what are we doing in the meantime? And it comes into, obviously, Adam, where you're standing for the Don's Trust board. I always worry about the Don's Trust board elections coming up in December, because it always feels there's always loads of stuff going on around that. So at a time when the Don's Trust board probably needs to be strong, we're going to have new people coming in. And it always takes, well, no, we'll know better than I will. It always takes a little bit of while to get your feet under the table. Yet we need people to hit the ground running with a clear. And it feels like, and I agree with you, with Mark James, I've been fortunate enough to be around him and his ideas for the show that we're doing, and he's very on it about selling the story. But he's one person, and he's got a lot on. I've said for a little while, I would take money out of the playing budget, and don't shoot me for this, I would take money out of the playing budget and put it in the back office. Because I see what the back office, I see how lean it is. you know, which is why I'm always very wary to even have a, you know, people say I'm a bit, I don't have a moan at them because I actually do see the challenges they have. But I'd put more money into the back office, Matt, because actually, do you know what?
I completely agree with you, Stu. I completely agree. I think that's what it is. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there are so many opportunities out there, but we haven't got, I don't think we've got the resources to do that. So the 50.01 is an easier option in a weird way than actually investing in the backroom staff to, you know, to give the MD, I'm going to remember his name at some point, James. Isn't it? Yeah, to give people,
it's a bit public, isn't it? He's out there all the time. You can't hide from James. Nonstop.
I know he's everywhere. But it's like to give people the resources that they need to do that. You know, to have that investment. Look now that Neil Ardley interview. One of the great things about it was, and you could hear the bitterness in his voice about getting a director of football in, and that changed things. Getting Craig Cope has changed things for us. So to have someone in who would do that sort of real commercial, international commercial investment, whatever it is, whatever they call it, where you're looking for those people in developing those partnerships, that philanthropy, I think that could bring additional funds in.
Yeah, one of the things that actually, like, we haven't got that amount of money to do that resourcing and to do the backroom stuff, which I actually also agree with. The one person that I would bring in is a volunteer manager, because there's an awful lot of skill set and there's an awful lot of will within the fan base. So if you have a good volunteer manager who actually looks at the kind of database, go, well, actually, lo and behold, you know, it goes back to the start of AFC Wimbledon. We wanted a kit designer. We had a kit designer. We wanted an accountant. We had an accountant. We wanted like an ex-football manager. We had an ex. They were all amongst our fan base. There are also so many other skills that are not tapped into. And when people get asked, say, look, I know you're like this, I don't know, big fundraising manager. Could you help AFC Wimbledon because you're a fan? And managed properly by a volunteer manager. That is skill sets we could get. And there's loads and loads of people like that. So if I was hiring one person, I'd do that, because we haven't got the resources to do all the things we want to do on a paid basis. But we have got a whole lot of very talented Wimbledon fans that want to make a difference. And we've not done that. So that'd be the one thing that I would do and I'd advocate for. You know, when I was on the board and Zav was on the board, and Zav was like a big advocate of the volunteer stuff, we were trying to do stuff, and it's still largely because the board turns over so many times.
Yeah.
So those kind of ideas fall down. So you need to have a paid volunteer manager, person who can just look at it, manage it, and really actively go for it. And there's some really talented people that could do that role. That's what I would hire.
And I would echo all of what you've all said there in terms of resourcing, getting people in outside or away from the football side. We definitely need that. I just want to take it back to what you said earlier, Niall, about the energy being expended on these talking points about the 50.01 and restricted actions and all that thing as well. I think if you think about the, as you say, sort of the energy, and is it worth all the energy that's being taken? Can it be better used elsewhere? There is, I would imagine there's quite a lot more people that aren't expending, and this isn't a criticism. What I mean is they're not expending any energy or any thought or time on this at all, really. It's not even coming into their headspace whatsoever. And I think also having this meeting on Monday night half term as well is, I don't think it's going to be another one of those things where the overwhelming majority of members are not going to get engaged with this whatsoever. And in that regard, I'm going to bring Adam in here as well, because I know, Adam, you wanted to talk about super restricted actions and things you'd like to put in place. But in the specific case of these two that they're discussing on Monday, do we actually need to be discussing them at this point?
I mean, I go back to what Stu said, was I don't even think we're going to get enough votes, actually, because of all the people we've onboarded. So it's kind of a bit frustrating that we're even having this conversation, because I think the conversation is with not enough people to vote. I don't like the way it's coupled together. That's the thing. I'd like to put in a bunch of restrictions and some options first and then move on to the 50.1 stuff. Should we even be talking about it now? I mean, we do need to talk about it, but I think we need, but also then I want us to take it off the table. This is the problem with all of this, is that the 50.1, the 75%, all of it is all about fan ownership. If we don't, we should, but that's my position. We should just take that off the table. We should own our fan ownership and decide what that is, go to the Guns, figure out how we resource the marketing to say all about that, make us what we are, make us great on the pitch, and figure out how do we turn that into something where we progress in, you know, to the championship, to wherever. So it seems like a bit of an odd conversation again, annoyingly.
And Adam, you're very strong on that. And that's what I like about you. You're very strong on take it off the table. And even though I feel we shouldn't do the super restricted action, so I think what we've got is strong enough. And I think we're going to see that. You know, I don't think this will pass. I don't think it passes. And I think it won't pass because of the numbers.
I totally agree.
Do you know what I mean? But I agree with you in what you're... If someone come away from me and said, look, we're going to take this off the table, but this is the plan we've got to say it's 75%, and this is what we're going to do. Because I'm fan ownership. There's nothing, you know, I volunteer for the club because I want to do something that the club can't afford, yeah. And I want to help any way I can. Like, lots of volunteers, and a volunteer manager, I agree massively with massive Niall. But I want a plan. I just, you know, and if we stick to it, like, I don't want a plan for the championship. I find it stupid. Like, championship, really? Like, have you seen League One? And that, you know, so I'm not really worried about these gimmicks, if I'm being honest with you, going to championship. I want to go, if someone said to me, I want to be fan-owned club, and this is how we're going to do it, we're going to give it all our best shot, I'll be on board. But at the moment, we waste time. We firefight. We've always firefighted, don't we?
But I also think if that fan ownership model said, like you said, had a plan, said we're going to grow the stadium here, we're going to have some more local businesses coming, we're going to do some outreach here, we're going to do things, you know, more DLAG kind of stuff, you know, and talked less about, oh, going to the championship or whatever, I think actually loads of our fans would buy into that and say, yeah, actually, I think our match day experience is very good generally, you know, but it's like less...
Apart from the beer.
Oh yeah.
Come on, I had to go there. I was tempted.
But do you know what I mean? Like, if there was if there was another craft beer company that was coming in on the other corner of the stadium, because we could do, you know, it's like that experience, because we've all said we love football. You said, I go and watch the park football, right? But it's the experience of the whole thing. And I think if we sold that model and said, yeah, we're going to be fan-owned because we can increase all of these things that make it so much better for the experience just on a match day, but also on a Sunday for the women's game, also for the kids that want to come through and play, and we improve the area. I mean, we look at Kingsmeadow. The shops on Kingsmeadow, they tripled in size because of us being there. That was fantastic, you know, and that actually is a really positive thing. There seems to be some weird disconnect between the level of football you play and the wonderful experience you can have. You know, we went from Premier League football pretty quickly to combined counties league football, and I loved it just as much. And I love it now. So I think, again, it comes back to, like, I'm really stuck on the boat. It's like, what are we doing? And Stu, like you said, it comes to the plan. Let's have a plan.
For me, I totally agree with all of that about the plan. And I think what's lacking on the development of a plan is a really clear vision. And I think for us, and I've said this a couple of times now, if our vision is to become the best fan-run club on the planet, that's the vision. And it's an aspirational vision. But if you go into every department within the club and the comms are going to be the best fan-run club on the planet, and they're thinking, well, how do we make our comms that best? We've got a commercial team. So how do we become the best fan-run club on the planet? So your restriction is fan-owned, but you want to be the best, or the playing budget, or the rest of it. So you know what your restrictions are, but we want to be the best. We want to learn from others and basically build that. And everything they do, all the objectives, every part of the build, the whole stadium, all the backroom staff, that's what they're focused on. That, for me, would be such a really good way of motivating and bringing us all together under that one vision. Because at the moment, I don't think that you could walk into the comms team and they'd think, right, well, what are we doing here? What's our actual overall purpose? What's the combined vision of AFC Wimbledon? If you walked into the commercial team, what's the combined vision of AFC Wimbledon? If you walked into the playing team, what's the combined vision? I don't think that's there. I don't think that's really clear. And I think something as simple as being the best fan-run club on the planet, it's aspirational, but we can all go, right, that's what we're going to do. And that, for me, is like, what we so lack. And I find that frustrating, because I've seen, I think, Stu, you'd have experienced it. I've experienced it having been on the Don's Trust board, and you can just see these pockets where people just don't even think anywhere near that.
No.
And that's the issue. Until you have a really strong leader who says, that's why I'm coming in and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make sure everybody thinks that same way, and you get the right people in, then we'll be motoring, and we're not at the moment.
And almost what you need is you need someone to come in and do that business development plan. Exactly. You know, so you come up, have that, have the vision. You know, you have those sort of like working groups or whatever it is. You do something, and I hate to say this, this is all business, a theory of change. You do these all these sort of models and you put in place, and you've got.
I heard that one before. That's a new one.
Yeah, theory of change, man. It's in my field of work. We talk about it all the time. So
I love the theory of change.
Yeah,
theory of change, man.
So you know, but if you sit down and you work out a proper model, based around that vision, you could do it. You could come up with a plan, but I think there's a lot of info, and also you talk to people on the DTB. They seem to be spending all their time doing stuff, whether that is firefighting or whatever it is that they're doing. It's really resource heavy, time heavy. Yeah. I'm amazed when people say they're going to stand for the DTB, to be honest. I mean, Stu and Nick, you're both passionate Wimbledon fans. You've got this great podcast, which has been going brilliantly for so long. Well, but I can't imagine either of you two are thinking, you know, you would stand for the DTB.
No chance because of time. I don't have the time for it. Simple as
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I've been obviously I do a Don't Trust stream and stuff like that, and I chat to them, and it's why I find it really difficult to have any criticism because I just know how stretched they are, and I don't doubt that they're doing everything for the right reason, even though I might not agree with what they're doing. You know, that sort of side of it. It's an interesting point you were saying about the experience as well. So when we interviewed Jackie Oatley, who came along to the Carlisle,
yeah.
She blew me over of how much she loved the club. Like, genuinely, someone who's been around the world watching football, commentating, and she said to me straight away, Stu, how do I become a member? Instantly, she goes, I want me to be a member, my husband and her son. Her son had a football kit. They're coming to games all the time now. Her husband's going to take her son. And she said to me, this is real football. You know, he knows all the Man City team. He knows all the She said to me, he knows all the Barcelona women's team more than I do, which was quite hilarious. But she said, I want him to watch real football. I want him to come down on Saturday and watch real football. So there's a market for it. But the thing that concerned me a little bit is I didn't really have any, I didn't know where to go for it. instantly I wanted to go, well, there's a QR code or, do you know what I mean? Something like, because there was I say that on the tour as well. You know, I want to capture them on the tour. We finish in a club shop and I say to them, these are the next games coming on. You know, I want them to buy a ticket. So it's just, again, that, you know, if we want members, we've got to find a way of capturing them. But she blew me away. Like, you know, I come away from that so impressed, like thinking if this is someone who loves the game so much, but likes us so much, we've got something, we just don't attack it.
Mm, but, and we all sort of had to think about wrapping up here, Stu, but a couple of things. One, yes, absolutely, we want to sell these memberships, and it's great that Jackie Oatley and her family would become members. Would they be voting on Monday, would be my question. Probably unlikely. And then, Matt, as you talk about the theory of change, but as we all know, change is not good. But we're just going to leave that one there. So, gents, thank you very much for your time on this one. We've still got a few bits and pieces to talk about. But to round up this sort of portion of our super unofficial podcast this evening, these two... No, actually, let's not go there. Okay, let me ask you this question. Because, Niall, you said that you sort of an aim for AFC Wimbledon to be the best fan-owned club in the country, if not Europe, if not the world. But if I was to ask everyone else, what would your sort of aim be? Or what do you want from AFC Wimbledon for the remainder of your time supporting the club?
Everyone wants a beer thing that works, doesn't he?
that's the height of Adam's aspirations for us. That's such a big question, I know, and a broad one. But, I mean, for me personally, my aim for AFC Wimbledon is just to always be there at Plough Lane for me to go and watch a game of football every Saturday, preferably Saturday at 3 o'clock. But I don't really think I want anything more than that. I'm quite happy. I think as I get older, you mellow, don't you? When you're younger, it's like, I need to win every game. But apart from smashing Milton Keynes once a season or twice a season, as long as we're there, I'm happy. But what about you guys, Stu? What would you say? What would you be? It's a tough question, I know, to throw at you.
Yeah, whenever I vote now, I think about my son. So my son's 6 years old. I think, what do I want Wimbledon to look like when he's my age? But, you know, when he's in his 20s, what team is he going to have? I want it to be competitive. I want us to always... I don't want it just to be an also-round. I want it to be competitive. But I suppose, yeah, Plough Lane. I love Plough Lane. It's everything, isn't it? You know, I still get that excitement when I turn up at Plough Lane every time. I don't think a lot of people are like that. So I suppose I want us to keep being ambitious, but realistic. That is my sort of, it's not really an answer because it's a difficult answer, but yeah. And now Hamady's come back at one point when he's at the end of his career and he can score some more goals. He's only 20, isn't he? 20, 21.
He'll be going somewhere in January. But you know,
yeah, he will be.
Adam, what about you?
Well, for me, like football is a spog of the community. And so for me, the big thing that sort of brings change in lots of positive ways is people working together. And so, and I think football is one of those pieces. And so I would like us to continue to be a beacon of community where we bring people together. We know sport and well-being is all connected, mental and health and all that kind of stuff. So for me, too many people are thinking about themselves. I like people thinking about a community, and that one of those pieces is having a football club in your community. So I don't know. Yeah, that's my ambition.
Matt?
Yeah. It is such a big question. I mean, I would like us to remain fan owned. I'd like us to build on what we've got at Plough Lane. I'd like us to look at different ways in which we resource our club going forwards. So maybe it is about, you know, we get a best chance if we get the things behind the scenes working well, you know. And I think if we can get the things behind the scenes working well, like Craig Cope, I think that's been an amazing thing. Then that's it. But being fan owned, and it's just a Stuart, like you say, it is the most beautiful thing going to our stadium. Oh, it's lovely. Wonderful when you go in there, and it's just, this is great, and we made it happen. Doesn't that give you a bit of a kick? Do you know what I mean?
That's what I love about Plough Lane. Totally wanted to pick up on that, and I'll say this to people that I bring to the ground: say, like, what makes us so different is that you walk into that ground, and every blade of grass, every seat, every brick, that belongs to us. You know, it doesn't belong to some other distant person. That's ours, you know, and it feels special. Like, Stu, totally like you, I get goosebumps every time I come into the ground because of that exact thing. You know, it's like so special. And obviously seeing all my brother's artwork obviously helps as well.
That's
obviously a big thing. But like, you know, it's so special. You know, so no other club can feel like that. Nobody else can have that connection. Because we built that ground, and that's just unbelievable. Plough Lane is just like, oh, I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah. Even with the bunker in the corner now, it's added culture to it.
I'm not with sports venue.
It's just, hey, look,
it's the place of golf course for a bit, didn't we? That was great.
I know. It's just, yeah. And we come back from anything, don't we? That's the thing.
That's it.
We are. We are the definition of a phoenix, aren't we, really? But, right, thank you, gents. We're going to move on to some more light-hearted matters now. And I think we could do a round of My Father Was a John Joe O'Toole Maker, but maybe in Blockbuster style. You know, in Blockbusters, there was always one against two. You know, like, I mean, if you were the two, I thought it was kind of cheating, you know. Yeah. But anyway, so we could do that. We could do the 9 years podcast, just Stu. Versus...
One second, it's three against one and I'm shit.
Yeah, but I don't know anything, so it's fine.
It's a handicap match, all right, Stu? We love a handicap match for a wrestling term, wrestling purists. But before we do that, Stu, I just have to mention very quickly, just sorry, as we do every week at this time, I did have to go to the doctors this week, Stu, unfortunately. I had to have a little GP visit. He said, I've got hypochondria. I was like, oh, it's not that as well. Clue number one, cryptic clue.
Oh, mate.
They're not getting better, they're getting worse. Number one, cryptic clue. So, Adam, no, Matt, you can have a little, you can, what's that word? You can confer on this one. Whereas Stu will have to sort of just
talk to
go
himself
first. Yeah, maybe. More Bobby Jr. than Bobby Dazzler. That is the cryptic clue.
Is this someone that played for Port Vale and Wimbledon?
Yes, but it's not Robbie Earle. All right. Okay. Let's just get that one out there straight away.
I don't even know why I'm thinking of Robbie Earle.
Bobby Jr. and Bobby Dazzler.
I'll go Ronan Curtis.
Yeah, okay, all right. Same old Wombles. Any ideas?
Well, I mean, if it's just someone who's played for both sides and it's not Robbie Earle and it's not Ronan Curtis, I've got Chislett's got to be the next. There's no rhyme or reason for that answer.
Okay.
I think there's some other really ancient Port Vale people, but I'm not sure that Nick would have pulled that out of the bag.
I think he would do. I've heard this before. I know where he's coming from.
I can say I can
get some really ancient connections.
Should we give you another? Clue? Okay, so this player only scored one goal for Wimbledon, but it was against Port Vale.
What? One goal?
No, that's in the. That, I'm sure that's in the thingy today, on the comparison about Wimbledon Port Vale. God.
Because obviously we're thinking going back to yesteryear, but we obviously played them in the Football League quite recent. We were in the same league as them, weren't we? So it's probably something going. I'm not trying to lead you off scent, by the way, because I have no idea. Port Vale, who came from Port?
Scored against Port Vale.
No idea.
But I see that's it. But I can't remember. I can remember who scored against who in the 80s. But
really?
Who did we sign from Port Vale?
I'll help
or
you
went,
a little
or
bit.
Went to Port Vale.
Yeah, we didn't sign him directly from Port Vale.
But well, that really did that's not helps at all.
Sorry.
That was a massive help in no way.
No way whatsoever.
Somebody who used to sign.
I think the third clue will help you out a little bit, all right?
You'd say that.
He was a Scottish centre-half who spent most of his career at Torquay United.
What?
Right, now this I should get now.
Yeah, you should get it.
I should get
you
it.
You should get it.
Although I should get it.
With your Torquay connections.
I feel like we need a buzzer like Blockbusters used to have. Torquay
United.
I ain't got a clue.
No.
So when I think of Scottish centre-half, I only think of Brian.
Brian McAllister.
Brian McAllister.
Brian McAllister came from us, though. Yeah. Did we not have...
Was it Alan Downs or something like that? I can't. No.
Alan Reeves.
Aaron Downs, Alan Reeves, they're good shouts, but no, I'm afraid not.
Alan Reeves is in fact not Scottish, which is the problem with scores.
That's
he scored two humdingers, didn't he? Own goals against.
He did. Villa.
Villa, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember them well.
So for a Scottish person. Somebody from like.
I think it was Super Grand.
I will know this. They couldn't have played that many games for
no
us, though.
No. He did not play many games for us at all, actually. He only played about half a season, to be honest with you. But shall I put you out of your misery?
Please. Yes.
I mean,
it was Chris Robertson who scored against Port Vale in 2016.
Oh.
And
it was still going, who's that?
Chris Robertson, of course.
Now, yes, right, see, Nick, when you're talking to the same old Wombles, the bits in the old, right?
Yeah,
that was the clue.
If you ask us any questions in recent times, our brains have melted anything in the last 20 years. Ask us stuff about the 80s and the 90s. We're on it. But, that's it.
Well, I mean, ish.
Ish. Well, 80s and 90s, fine. Anything about, whatever.
I have no idea what he did when he left us, because, who cares?
He ended up. He went. He went to a few
different
clubs.
This is my argument, Stu, on all things football. Really, is they've left Wimbledon. Who cares? I know. I'm right. Premier League.
Don't know.
Unless they've got a sell on fee, then we all hope they play. And
we do care now because they all come back, so it's all good. They come back and be celebrities and whatever. So we do care. We do care.
Yeah, Jay Bothroyd. But anyway, yes, the cryptic clue was more Bobby Jr. because Bobby Robert's son. That's where I was going with that one. That's very, but speaking of Port Vale, very, very quickly, we do go there on Saturday. Stu, I think I can't make it up to Port Vale. I know that Niall and Matt, you are actually,
in a posh part.
These people have come from Stoke. You are currently in Stoke-on-Trent going to visit Vale Park tomorrow. And do you know what? I am somewhat jealous because I actually think this is going to be a cracking game. It's easily for me the game of the day in League Two. And I actually think I am 100% confident.
Nick, one second. How is any game in League Two when Wimbledon are playing not the game?
Well,
that's not
the game. That is a fair point.
That's a fair point, actually. Answer to that.
Okay. But even for Harrogate fans, I'll say it's the game of the day in League Two tomorrow, Division Four. I don't think we lose. I've got. I cannot see us losing this game. Port Vale have won their last four. I don't think they make it five in a row. I think, although we lost to Notts County last week, I actually think it suits us to play teams that are expected to take the game to us, and we can hit them on the break and sit deep and whatever. We haven't actually played them, Stu, since 2017. You're quite right. We lost 2-0 at Vale Park that day. That was a Saturday game, though. Coincided. That was WrestleMania weekend, by the way. That's when I was in Orlando, for those listeners, readers that remember back.
Stoke,
way back when.
Stoke or Orlando?
Yeah.
Stoke's very pretty. It's lovely. So
honestly,
we're loving it.
Honestly, Stoke is full of roads and retail parks. That's all I've seen so far.
That's the name of my retail park.
Because we're north of the city centre, which is apparently rubbish anyway. And there's just retail parks. We're in retail parks. That's really nice.
Can I ask a question, by the way? Nick, have Port Vale changed their end that the home and away fans come in? Because I was getting really confused whether they changed the side of the... Yeah, so I was getting confused whether they changed the side that the camera was on, which was doing me in. They've changed... They put where the away fans used to be are now the home end.
Oh.
Yep.
Weird.
Mm. Random bit of information. Must have been some sort of luck or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the reasoning behind
it. So don't sit in the wrong, don't sit in the wrong end, you guys.
Thanks, Stu.
What is your we'll start, Adam? What's your prediction for Port Vale?
Well, I'm not going to predict because we don't like to do that. But what I would like to, I think we need to win away. So my hope is that we do that, because I would like us to turn that form around, because I don't quite see why we have such different forms away and home. So yeah, I'd hope that we win.
This, Adam, is like a similar answer to like Nick's what's the game of the day? Like, I hope we win. What? When are you going to go, do you know what? It'd be quite nice if we drew. No.
Well, I think tomorrow would be quite nice if we did.
I think we'd all take a draw now. But
we'd all take a draw, yeah.
Yes. But what do you guys reckon, Niall?
I'm massively... worried about the football gods, right? So I can't predict anything on this. I predict anything else and any other team, but on our own, I never do. So I always thought I'm going to upset the football gods. So I can't. I just, you know, it's really difficult. We played really well at Notts County. I think we should have won the game. We didn't. So I can't predict. I think we're in good form, minds, but
we suffer, Nick. We suffer from trauma. I think this is a 2002 thing. We suffer from trauma, and so we don't predict, just in case something goes wrong again. You know, I don't even think we step on the cracks. Still, it's ridiculous, this superstition.
Number 13, black hats, ladders, the whole works. We're full on superstitious, and same old Wombles, paranoid Wombles.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
What we can summarise from that then is that officially the Same Old Wombles podcast has predicted a 5-0 win at Vale Park tomorrow afternoon. Stu?
I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's a great test for us, Port Vale top. I think Notts County was a good one to test how good we are, and I think we come away in flying colours. Having Joe Lewis and Ryan Johnson back is a massive thing for us. I don't see us losing. I don't see us losing. I'll take a draw. I'll take a draw, because ultimately, pick up a point on the road, win your home games, doesn't, you know, bring you around about. And of course, we've got a few games. Obviously, we've got a great game on Tuesday night against Brighton under-21s, Nick, that I know you're going to love to go to. And then we play the FA Cup. We're going to be top of that group as well, Nick.
What group? I have no idea.
The Southern group. I think it's Group B. That's really sad that I know that.
I don't know. You could say, and look, this is like the 808 from earlier. You could have said anything there and be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, updates from Port Vale, of course, from 9 Years Podcast and Same Old Wombles Twitter accounts. Of course, you should follow us all on Twitter at 9Morris Podcast and at Same Old Wombles, gents. Guessing that's your Twitter handle, yeah.
And Fred's. And Fred's, of course. I know
you. And Fred's, you are the most, yes, the followed AFC Wimbledon podcast on Threads. I am, yes. We can't compete with you on that score. Gents.
We are rolling on Threads. 15 whole followers.
Jeez. I can't even count that high. Right. Elsewhere in League Two, just a bit of news to bring everyone. Swindon Town have sacked their manager. Mark Kennedy has been sacked. Ian Holloway's gone in there. It was always a risk, wasn't it, Stu, to appoint a former violinist as manager? But yeah.
It's always a risk going to Swindon Town, to be fair. Absolute basket case.
A little bit, yeah, a little bit dodgy for them.
But if you're going to bring a nutcase into the building, Ian Holloway is your nutcase.
We were just talk, on the way here. We're wondering, you know, what Wimbledon manages the one afterwards.
Yeah.
Who are you going to put in? Who's after that?
Because he's because they're former Wimbledon players, aren't they? Are managing Swindon, so but they're going back. So you know, Mark Kelly was quite young. Ian Holliday's older, so it's got to be Bassett next. Surely he comes in.
Yeah, we're not to get into finances, but Swindon apparently are only taking cash bookings tomorrow for tickets.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's a sign, isn't
It is fine.
Yeah, but I applaud that, Stu, because, you know, cash is king, as we all know this. Down with modern society. But anyway, right. I think that brings us to a close. Let's see how this goes. Right. So, first of all, Adam Macnair, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolute pleasure.
Wonderful to be here.
And thank everybody for listening. Guys, do you want to do your sign off and then we'll do our sign off?
Our song is a bit more special. It might have to be the one at the end.
No, I'm going
Don't
to cut
worry,
it
we don't.
out. I will
I don't
cut
think we
this. I'll make the
necessarily have a
sign-offs
sign off.
different.
You're
Yeah,
not.
we'll cut. Yeah.
No,
Fair enough.
I won't. Don't worry.
We'll skip. We'll.
No, I think though, on behalf of the same old woman, we'd just like to say thank you very much to Stu for reaching out. Hope it's been informative. I hope you've all learned something. Probably hearing the same arguments again and again and again on the same old Wombles. Nick, thank you very much for hosting this, my friend. So look forward to seeing you down at out the lane.
Not Tuesday night.
Not Tuesday
Not
night.
Tuesday, no.
No. Grimsby will probably be
We'll
the
all be
next
there in
visit
the
on another
queue, won't we, for
night.
that big, huge, massive game that we of the competition that we all love so much.
But hey, guys, you'll be looking out for results. I know, even you, Nick. I know you'll be keeping a sneaky eye out for the results.
You know the problem with this competition is that unfortunately, when you are on so many different WhatsApp groups and you're on social media and things like that, you can't avoid it. So I will know the result, but I can't say I'll be looking to find it out, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, you
Top of
can't.
the
I did actually read something on social media that apparently that means something, like that actually has relevance, apart from you going into the next round. Like, do you get a home draw or
Get
something?
home,
Yeah,
yeah.
apparently.
You get a
Get
home
home, you
draw.
get a home draw, and I'm sure we all know we're going to draw with the warm balls on that one, no doubt.
No,
Oh,
it's not good.
There's only about a one in. I think it's like a one. I think it's like a one in eight chance in that competition.
No. I mean,
Well.
look, not again. Honestly, when because that draw came through when I was in this big European club meeting, and like I must have had so many people coming to me like, that is the shittest draw you could possibly get.
I love the FA Cup draw. Absolutely love it. That happened. I turned it off and sulked. I'm like, there's no fun in that. You've got 90 odd teams you can draw.
Yeah.
And you get that, like I just spoiled the
That
FA
is
Cup.
the worst. There is no draw worse than that.
And then you get them celebrating as if like it's a great draw. No.
Oh.
No. We will of course discuss this more next week. The trip to Milton Keynes next Sunday. But Stu, you've also reminded me there is a great rant that Chris actually pointed out to me, directed me to, on another podcast, another new podcast, which has got Helen Chamberlain and a lot of the old Soccer AM people on. And Helen Chamberlain goes on a bit of a rant about the demise of the FA Cup and how she hates it so much that it's been devalued so much. And I'd recommend anyone check that one out because I still do love the FA Cup. It's my favourite competition. And unfortunately, yes, it has taken a bit of a battering in recent times. But anyway, on that note, I shall say I'm off now. I think, Stu, now I'm at half term. I've got a bit of time. I can start doing things like cooking again. I don't really cook during the term. I don't have time. So maybe you do a bit of cooking, maybe a bit of a smashed mango curry or something like that. So I'm looking forward to that. But otherwise, gents, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you. I'm
Where
just
did
going.
that come from?
I have
I
no
love it.
idea.
As I said,
A curry. That is never ever going to be seen on my plate, ever.
smashed mango curry. Is that
One
just
day
some
I
sort
shall no, one day I shall make you a smashed mango curry,
Well.
and we shall sit round and listen to maybe we'll have a listen to maybe some Smashing Pumpkins as well at the same time, and have a wonderful
I'm
evening.
quite interested in that curry, so
Yeah,
sorry.
Joe, well, you and Adam have a little bit of a love-in, and me and Stu, we can go down the my pie and get some proper food.
Joe, you know we talk about our ambitions. My pie to be the main thing in the West End, to be the main supplier of pies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
Now that.
totally. Now we're talking. That would be a great ambition. I just feel sorry for Nick because I'm like this as well. You just trying for the last 15 minutes to sign off, and it's just it's,
make it well. Do you know what?
I know the feeling.
My
all the combined listeners are the same old Wombles and 9 years. If you want a mango curry recipe, smash mango curry, you know where to go. It's Nick Draper. And if you want to eat proper food,
yes.
And if my pie are listening, maybe a smashed mango my pie, they can create that and work on that one. But as you say, Matt, do not worry, Matt, because as Chris will be listening to this as well, coming from our family with its Irish roots, saying goodbye does tend to be a bit of a long, drawn-out affair. So
you just got to leave. Don't just go.
Yeah, this is it. This is just go. Well, on that note, see ya. No, let's go. Alexa Bliss, Hag First Milk Last. 2 + 2 = 4. Both the 9 Years podcast and the same old Wombles will speak to you again next week.